Good evening, all. Good to see you here this evening. Hope you're current on your daily Bible reading, or reasonably current, reasonably so, within a day or two or three. Some years ago, and it's been a good long while now, 12, 15 years ago, you may have heard this story before, there was a break-in at a very expensive department store in London. And the thieves, can you call them thieves? I don't know. Two guys broke in and they spent all night in this department store and they didn't take anything out with them when they left the next morning. What they had done is they spent all night long switching price tags on things all around the store. And so when the employees came in the next day, you know, a $500 or $600 stereo was marked $17.95. And a $3 box of file folders was marked $2,175. And it took the employees an enormous amount of time to go around and find out what the prices actually should be and switch all those price tags back to the way they should be. And that story has kind of been seized on by a lot of people. It's kind of a parable for our time because somebody has changed all the price tags and changed the values that we have in our world. And what used to be highly prized is despised now, and things that used to be held in great contempt are celebrated. Hollywood is most famous for that. Marilyn Monroe, of all people, Marilyn Monroe said that Hollywood is a place where they'll pay you $1 million for a kiss and 50 cents for your soul. And at least she understood that the value structure was all a big mess in Hollywood. Dallas Willard, a theologian and writer, commented on pop culture today, and what he said is, "What is truly profound is thought to be stupid or trivial or worse, boring, while what is actually stupid and trivial is thought to be profound." I think he's exactly right. And it's interesting to me that what he was talking about is a book that many of us have bought and read. It's called Everything That I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. How many of you have read the little column that is taken from? Okay. And it is kind of an interesting and amusing column. Dallas Willard said, "I want you to think about it just for a minute and ask yourself, did you really learn everything you needed to know in kindergarten?" Well, the answer is obviously, of course not. That was the bare beginning of life's education. And so he went on to comment and said basically that things that are truly profound, things like Jesus died for the redemption of the world, that's thought to be stupid or trivial or worse yet, boring. Because that, you know, that's the worst thing you can be tagged with is boring. And things that are actually stupid and trivial are thought to be deep, profound thoughts. Well, I think he's right, but I also know that there's nothing new about that. 3,000 years or more ago, David wrote a psalm on this very idea. And it's one of our favorites and one that was in the daily Bible reading for this past week. It's Psalm 14. Let's go to Psalm 14. We're going to spend all of our time there this evening just meditating on the things that David has said in Psalm 14. These things are not stupid or trivial. They are deeply profound. And although we've heard these things a number of times in various contexts, it will be well with our souls if we can go back through Psalm 14 and think about what he has to say. Let's go ahead and read through the psalm, then we're going to come back and talk about it. Let's just do that. Start with me in verse 1, if you would. "The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. Their deeds are vile. There's no one who does good. The Lord looks down from heaven on the sons of men to see if there are any who understand, any who seek God. All have turned aside. They have together become corrupt. There is no one who does good, not even one. Will evildoers never learn? Those who devour my people as men eat bread and who do not call on the Lord? There they are, overwhelmed with dread, for God is present in the company of the righteous. You evildoers frustrate the plans of the poor, but the Lord is their refuge. Oh, that salvation for Israel would come out of Zion. When the Lord restores the fortunes of His people, let Jacob rejoice and Israel be glad. There's one thing that's pointed out in this psalm that's pointed out in a lot of other scriptures as well, and that is the world has everything upside down, but God is going to turn it right side up. You start out in verse 1 realizing that everything's upside down in the world. In verse 1 he says, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. Their deeds are vile. There is no one who does good." We need to just kind of think about this for a minute, because in Hebrew there are several different words for fool. One of the words just means somebody who doesn't know very much, but he's coachable. You know, you can train him and he'll catch it. He just doesn't know very much now. One of the words for fool, though, is the word Nabal. And there actually was a guy back in the Old Testament whose name was Nabal, and his wife came to David and said, "That's his name and that's his nature, boy. You know, he's a fool, really." That kind of fool, that's the word that's used here, Nabal. And what it actually means is someone who is intellectually and morally deficient. I mean, he hasn't got it. He hasn't got it mentally, and he hasn't got it morally either. And it's amazing how often those two things go hand in hand, isn't it? You see someone who is morally deficient, they're not a good person at all, and you realize they're also not all that swift. They're just, you know, they're not catching it real well. Intellectual and moral deficiency often go together. Now, this intellectually and morally deficient guy says in his heart, there's no God. Now, two things we want to think about there, too. He says in his heart. First thing you have to remember about that is he doesn't say it out loud. Maybe even he knows that that would sound ridiculously stupid and trivial. So he doesn't say it out loud, it's just in his heart. But boy, in his heart, I mean, that is the very absolute center and core of who he is and what he is. So right at the very center of him, right in the dead spot center of him, he is saying there is no God. That becomes a problem. Because he's saying there is no higher authority and there is no higher power in his life. There is no one to say no to him. There is no one to urge him to right conduct. There is no one that has more authority than he does. He makes his own decisions. He's going to do exactly what he pleases and nobody can stop him. So what's the result of that? What's the result of someone who in his heart says there's no God? There's no power, there's no authority higher than me. Well, the result is exactly what follows. They are corrupt. Their deeds are vile. What they've done is they have made themselves corrupt. There was no one to stop them, no one to check what they had in mind. So they made themselves corrupt. And the actions that they undertook were vile. We don't even use that word in our common conversation, do we? Vile. What does that mean? Vile. It is despicable. It is the lowest of the low. It's the worst. It is vile. They made themselves to be that. It's all their own decision. They, you know, nobody did it to them. It's not mom and daddy's fault, not society's fault. They weren't just born that way. They did it to themselves because there's no higher authority, right at the very heart of them, right at the very center of who they are. There's no God, no authority, no power greater than them. They don't worry about it. And the verdict on these people is there's no one who does good. Literally, if you'll permit me to do this, literally it says, of the making of good, there is none. Of the making of good, there is none. So what that means is there's never a thought in their minds of doing good for good's sake. There's never any thought of being of being considerate of someone because that person needs some consideration. It would never enter their minds to be compassionate to someone who needed compassion. The only reason they would be compassionate to someone, the only reason they would do something good, is if it were directly going to benefit them. There's no idea of bringing good into the world. They're completely and totally self-centered, absolutely self-focused. The only thing they have going on in their heads is self-interest. Now you look out here in the world, whether you're looking in Seminole, whether you're looking in the greater state of Oklahoma or in the United States of America, or if you're looking in North America, all of North America, or if you're looking at the entire world, it doesn't matter. Wherever you look, there are such people all around us all the time. There are people all around us all the time. They want to live bad lives. They want to live with no higher authority than themselves. And they want to live among good people. See, they don't want to follow the rules. But they want you to follow the rules, always and in every case. They want to live bad lives around good people. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They live like they will never be called to account for what they do. But God has a different view of this entirely, and that's in the next two verses, verse 2 and 3. Let's go back to Psalm 14. Just think about verse 2 and 3. Because God, their view is there's no God. No higher authority, no higher power in the whole universe. No one to say no to them. Look at verse 2. The Lord looks down from heaven on the sons of men to see if there are any who understand, any who seek God. All have turned aside. They have together become corrupt. There is no one who does good, not even one. The very words of the psalm are fascinating. I mean, the phrasing of this is so good. God looks down. He looks down from above. His perspective is above it all. Their perspective is in the world. They only see the little bitty part of the picture. But God's perspective is above it all. I think I've told you the illustration that a colleague of mine uses about the maze. You know, he says you never go to a restaurant where they have games on the placemats. What? He says, yeah, never go to a restaurant. What that means is the service is slow and they know it's slow and they're not going to do anything about it, so they have to distract you. So they give you a game to play. And the most common game that you play is the maze. You know, you start up here and you got to wind your way around all these things and finally wind up down here. He said, that's not really too tough. And he's right, it's not too tough because of your perspective. You're above it all. You can see the whole thing at once. That's God's perspective on our lives. He sees the whole thing at once. It's not too tough for Him to see where we've made all the wrong turns and acted like fools. It's easy for Him. He knows exactly. Don't turn left there. Don't turn. I told you not to turn left. You know, and we just, our perspective is from within the maze. We can't see over the walls. We don't know what happens tomorrow or next week or next year. What we need is someone who is above it all to tell us how to live. Don't turn left, turn right there. Now turn left. You know, we need someone whose perspective is above it. That's exactly where God is. He looks down on the sons of men. His perspective is above it all. He sees it all because He really is the higher authority. And He really is the higher power. The one that the fool denies. Denies that He even exists. No such thing. Want to bet? The Lord looks down on the sons of men, and He looks to see if there are any who understand. Is there any understanding out there? He's looking for insight. This word, understanding, can also be translated just insight. Insight is a really interesting idea. It means that you're able to look into something and see a deeper and greater reality than what appears just on the surface. Is there any insight? Is there any understanding? Can you look at the situation and see more than just the surface there? Do these people have the insight to realize that they are spiritual characters? That there is a spiritual side of life? Do they realize that they are amphibious creatures? That they live both in the physical and the spiritual world at the same time? Do they realize that they are an immortal soul? Can you just think about that for just a second? You are an immortal soul. I didn't say you're eternal because you haven't existed from before the beginning. That's reserved to God. We are created, but our soul is immortal, we are not going to die. The soul will go on and on and on and on and on. Now look, if you are going to live 125,000 years, how important are these 70, or maybe by reason of strength, 80 years that we get here? You're going to live 125,000 years. How important are those 80 that you deal with here? Well, they make up a micro blip on your whole life expectancy. But look, what if you're going to live 125,000 times 125,000 years? What if you're going to live from now on, long after time ceases to exist at all? Now, how important is this micro blip of our lives? See, we have this tiny little perspective because we're stuck here inside the maze. We can't see over the walls to see what's going to happen next week, next year, whatever. But we need that long-term perspective. We need to gain the understanding, the insight to realize that we are immortal souls. This portion of our lives is very, very short. And when God looks down to see if there are any who understand, what does He see? He sees a bunch of fools. All have turned aside. They have together become corrupt. There's no one who does good, not even one. These people just don't see reality. They're not taking the long-term perspective at all. They're taking the short-term perspective. I read a story this past week about a guy who, for reasons known only to himself, now you tell me if this is a smart guy or not. This guy's name is Joe Barrett. He went into a convenience store in Iowa and he robbed the convenience store. Okay, now that's not too bright. But what is even less bright is that he had just been in the convenience store a little bit earlier and used the ATM in the convenience store. How many of you have used ATMs at any time during your life? Okay, do you realize that when you use the ATM, you put a card in there that has your name and address and telephone number and all kinds of other personal information on it, and they take your picture with the security camera in the ATM? He had been in there and used the ATM not once, but twice, just before he decided to go back and rob the store. I guess he didn't have much in his account. He couldn't get the money that he needed. So he went back in to rob the store. That's what you call a really short-term perspective. I mean, he is just looking minute to minute. It's like he couldn't think that 5 minutes ago his mug was shot with this camera here. They know who he is. He's got the super short-term perspective. This guy is just not too bright. I read a quote one time that was talking about the difference between rich people and poor people. Basically, this woman said, rich people plan for three generations. Poor people plan for Saturday night. And she's pretty right. They can only think in a very short-term perspective, so they don't do anything that's going to last any time at all. They just work on that really short-term perspective. This is what God sees. God looks down. He's above it all. He has all power and authority. He looks all over the entire situation. What does He see? He sees a bunch of fools who have this micro perspective on their lives. They do not consider themselves immortal souls. He sees them making these very, very short-term decisions. People who act in the short term like that are like little toddlers fighting over toys. You know, in another 15 minutes, it's not going to matter at all. And the toddlers 15 minutes from now won't even want that toy. That's the super short-term perspective. But God is going to turn everything right side up. That's verse 4 through 6. Let's go back to Psalm 14. Just think about verses 4 through 6. Will evildoers never learn? You can almost hear David sighing, you know. Will they never learn? those who devour my people as men eat bread and who do not call on the Lord. There they are, overwhelmed with dread, for God is present in the company of the righteous. You evildoers frustrate the plans of the poor, but the Lord is their refuge. God is going to turn everything right side up, and being an enemy of God is a really, really bad idea. And the Scriptures are full of that. Over and over and over, there is so much precedent in the Bible that being an enemy of God is a really bad idea, but these people just don't learn. Well, now that's pretty much the definition of a fool, isn't it? Somebody who just won't learn. It doesn't matter how many times you tell them. They're just not going to get it. I was reading something completely unrelated in C.S. Lewis, and he was talking about the fact that school teachers, and you school teachers, you know this, okay? School teachers know when the parents don't know and when the students don't know. The teachers know that there is just no point in giving the test again to the kid. There's just no point. He's not going to do one bit better, no matter how many times you give him the test. He's just not going to get it. He doesn't learn. Being an enemy of God is a bad idea, but sometimes these people just don't get it. And it doesn't matter how many times you tell them, they're just not going to get it. But the thing that we need to understand is that God is not absent. He's not gone someplace. He's there. He is present in the company of the righteous. All of us have this experience sometime in our lives where we think God's gone. We pray and pray and pray and nothing happens, and it's like you're talking into a dead telephone. And you feel like, you know, there are some days when everything is going well and you're happy and the sun is shining, the birds are singing, and you feel so close to God and He feels so close to you and you're just, oh man, everything is great. And then there are other times when you are in an agony of near despair over things that are happening in your life and you pray and pray and pray and there's no answer and it feels like God is a million miles away and He's not listening. I mean, every one of us have had that experience. Job had that experience, didn't he? And you go back and read the book of Job and he's demanding an accounting from God. I want you to answer me. Why is all this happening? I'm an innocent man. Why is all this happening to me? And Job thought God was distant. Oh, he thought he was a million miles away. And in reality, God was never closer to him. God was right there all the time. God was watching him so carefully. He was right there with him. And sometimes when we feel like God has abandoned us and He's just not answering, we need to remember that our feelings don't determine reality there. God's right there with us. He's there in the company of the righteous. In 2 Kings chapter 6, there's a little story. The prophet Elisha, first part of 2 Kings, all about Elisha. Great, powerful, wonderful prophet of God. 2 Kings chapter 6, the king of Aram, the Arameans, that'd be the Syrians. They come in and they invade the northern kingdom and they attack the city where Elisha is staying, and they wake up in the morning and there are all these enemies surrounding the city, and Elisha's servant says, "What are we going to do? What are we going to do?" And Elisha says to him in verse 16 and 17, he says, "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And he prays for God to open the eyes of this servant. And it happens, and the servant looks up and he sees the hills are just filled with the army of God. Angels out there just thronging the hills. He hadn't seen that before. God didn't give him the ability to see that. "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." When it seems like God is absent, we need to remember that He's not absent, and those who are with us are more than those who are with them. You evildoers, he says in verse 6, you frustrate the plans of the poor, but the Lord is their refuge. The victims will be vindicated. There is an accounting one day. You know, the word vindicated is kind of interesting. It comes from the Latin vindex, which means revenge. Revenge. The victims will be vindicated. That, you know, that really is the theme of the book of Revelation, by the way. Revelation is about, it's not how it looks. You know, from the very beginning, John realizes it's not how it looks. What God is showing him is substantially different than what's going on in the world. It's not how it looks. One day God's going to turn it all over again. Oh, it's upside down now, and everybody looks around and they think this is the way it's supposed to be, and it's not the way it's supposed to be. But one day God is going to turn it right side up, and that day will surprise everybody. And that's why David finishes the psalm with verse 7. Oh, that salvation for Israel would come out of Zion. When the Lord restores the fortunes of His people, let Jacob rejoice and Israel be glad. That is exactly the way we feel about it too. And that's why, at the end of 1 Corinthians, Paul says, Maranatha, O Lord, come. We can't wait. We can't wait. This world is upside down. Things are bad. And we just can't wait till God comes in and turns it all right side up. In Acts chapter 17, Paul has gone into the city of Thessalonica and he's preaching the gospel there. And the Jews are furious at what they're hearing. And so they charge out there. And I really don't like the translation of it in the NIV. I think they've kind of robbed it of some of the power. Some of the other versions do a much better job because the Jews go out and what they say is, these men who have turned the world upside down have come here also. That's exactly what they said, by the way. They've turned the world upside down. The NIV has it. They've caused trouble all over the world. Don't give me that. They've turned the world upside down, folks. When the apostles went out and preached the gospel of Jesus Christ, they turned the world upside down. See, the world had already been upside down. And what they did was turn it right side up. And they couldn't stand it. Because when it was upside down, they thought they had everything going their way. The apostles came in and told the gospel and turned everything upside down. See, when you get used to things being wrong, when somebody makes it right, it feels wrong. That's what happens with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Everything gets flipped back over the way it's supposed to be. When the gospel of Jesus Christ is known and preached and taught and believed, you know and I know that an on-screen kiss is not worth 50 cents. And you and I know that you wouldn't sell your immortal soul for $1 million. The world has it upside down. God's going to turn right side up. And we can't wait. We need to be patient. And we need to be fearful in all this. And we need to be faithful. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that this is the way it's supposed to be. This is not the way it's supposed to be. This world is upside down. But one day, the Lord God Almighty is going to step in and turn it all right side up again. And when Christ comes, that will happen. And when everything gets turned upside down, or I should say right side up, that's the day you want to be found standing. You want to be found right side up, not upside down. The Lord is coming again, and He's going to turn it all right side up. For those of us who obey the gospel of Christ, we look to the world like we're upside down. We've got all kinds of crazy ideas and funny values that we do silly things like coming back to a church building on Sunday night for a period of worship of God. That looks really silly to the world. They think that's all upside down. That's right side up. That's right side up. They just don't realize it yet. We need to be patient. We need to be faithful. We need to be fearful. And don't fall into the trap of thinking that things are already right side up. They're not. This world is upside down. And the gospel of Jesus Christ turns it right side up. If you're not a Christian this evening, we're going to sing an invitation song and give you an opportunity to respond to Jesus' invitation to come to Him and be turned right side up. You can obey the gospel like these people did in the book of Acts. You can be immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins. And if you're a Christian, you've already made the covenant with Christ in that way, but you haven't followed His will for your life. And when you stop to think about it, in reality, it looks like the world has it right, and that means you're upside down. Well, you need to turn around. That is, repent. And get turned right side up, because when the Lord comes and turns everything right side up, you want to be found standing. You don't want to be upside down that day. If you need to respond publicly to Jesus' invitation, we urge you to do it right now while we stand together and sing.